North Korea says the U.S. should keep its mouth shut about worsening inter-Korean relations if it wants to hold a successful presidential election.
That is VOA's William Gallo explaining increasing inter-Korea tensions. North Korea is responding with threats toward the United States. It's Friday, June 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Polpy Boone in Washington, D.C. Also ahead, supporters fight to defund the police. Washington, D.C. restaurants trashed, but owners react in a different way. How statistical modeling is predicting the next world trend. And are our religious freedoms slowly disappearing? It's all on today's VOA Asia. In response to increasing tensions between North and South Korea, the State Department says it is disappointed in that decision. North Korea says the U.S. will also experience an unpleasant thing. VOA's William Gallo dives into the details.
North Korea says the U.S. should keep its mouth shut about worsening inter-Korean relations if it wants to hold a successful presidential election. The statement comes as North Korea ramps up tensions with South Korea. Earlier this week, Pyongyang said it will cut off all official inter-Korean dialogue channels. The U.S. State Department said it was disappointed in that decision. For North Korea, that was unacceptable interference. In retaliation, North Korea said the U.S. may experience an unpleasant thing, or a hair-raiser, that could disrupt the U.S. vote. The statement is part of a divide-and-conquer strategy, says ex-U.S. diplomat Mintaro Oba.
They are trying to drive a wedge between the United States and South Korea, and they are showing that they are mindful of the U.S. election and that they are able and willing to raise tensions at inopportune moments for President Trump.
North Korea is not likely to be a major factor in the U.S. election. Still, U.S. President Donald Trump has warned North Korea not to conduct major provocations around election time. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in January vowed the world would soon witness a new strategic weapon, suggesting he may launch a longer-range missile. The North's threat on Thursday was issued by the Foreign Ministry, which is relatively uninfluential. It also has a record of making empty threats. In December, the North Korean vice foreign minister threatened a Christmas gift if the U.S. didn't make concessions and stalled nuclear talks. The U.S. didn't give ground, and the North didn't fire any big missiles. But Oba says that could always change.
I think they very much recognize that President Trump does not want to head into Election Day with things in chaos with North Korea, with his diplomatic skills in doubt. And so North Korea may well conduct some sort of inter-Korean provocation or missile test that is designed to force him to the table to avoid the perception of looking weak.
The nuclear talks have been stalled since early last year, when Trump and Kim failed to reach an agreement at a summit in Hanoi, Vietnam. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. President Trump looking into addressing issues brought up by Black Lives Matter protesters. U.S. counts 2 million COVID-19 cases. China, who is the world's largest creditor, delays debt repayments for 77 countries. One protester fears of being arrested in Hong Kong, then flees to Taiwan. China using cabbage to solidify its claims in the Asia Sea. African and Asian Americans are more likely to die from COVID-19. You'll find all these stories and expanded coverage when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Amy Polpy Boone in Washington, D.C. Dr. Anthony Fauci is one of the world's leading immunologists and helps lead President Trump's coronavirus task force. VOA's Lizia Bakalets sat down with him recently to discuss upcoming developments in fighting COVID-19.
I've read that you are optimistic about the vaccine that is being produced by Moderna company. So what are the grounds of such optimism, and are there any others which look promising in your opinion?
Yeah, I am cautiously optimistic that we will have a vaccine within a reasonable period of time, not only from Moderna, but from other companies too. They are not the only company. We are involved in collaboration with several other companies. The reason I'm optimistic is that in the early trials in humans and in animals, the results have been favorable. In other words, it protects animals in the experimental stage. And in the phase one trial in humans, the vaccine was able to induce a response that was predictive that you might be protective against the virus. So although you never can guarantee that you will have a safe and effective vaccine, and that would be foolish to guarantee that because no one can guarantee that, but we are cautiously optimistic that we're going in the right direction.
And talking about optimism, do you mean that some of people who was tested, they like show these neutralizing antibodies? Am I right?
Correct. And we looked at the phase one study. At a moderate dose, individuals were able to mount not only just a plain antibody response, but an antibody response that's called neutralizing. Namely, it blocks the ability of the virus to replicate. That's a very good sign when you're looking at what kind of response a vaccine induces.
The third and, as far as I know, the final stage of the Moderna vaccine trial might start in July, correct?
Correct.
And at the same time, the production of the doses will begin before the final results of the trial are available. So, and as you noted, it is developing at risk, correct? Why was such a decision made? It's very complicated, I think, and it could cost a lot of money.
Right. So the risk is only to the money. It's not a risk to safety. And it's not a risk of compromising the scientific integrity of the study. This is such an emergent and important situation that we, the federal government, is willing to take the financial risk in order to expedite the process and get us to a vaccine months and months earlier than we normally would. So we feel it's worth that risk. If it turns out the vaccine works, the risk was worth taking. If it turns out the vaccine doesn't work, then we've lost money. But in such an emergent situation, we would rather take the risk in order to gain time.
I have to ask about the World Health Organization and its statement about asymptomatic patients. I know that there are a lot of media coverage, but still, what is your opinion? And do you believe that asymptomatic patients can transmit the infection as well as symptomatic?
Well, it's not what I believe. It's what the truth is. They can. The data is clear that you know, about 25 to 50% of people who are infected are asymptomatic. We know that asymptomatic individuals can transmit it. We do not know what the extent of that is, but we know that it is not rare. And that was what the controversy from the WHO statement said, that it's a very rare event. We don't know exactly what the percentage is, but there is enough evidence to indicate that it could be an important part of the transmission.
That was VOA's Lizia Bacalet speaking with Dr. Fauci. Happening now in Asia news, South Korean health officials say they're worried a second wave of COVID-19 infections are headed their way. Because of their current fragile economy, government officials don't want to reimpose restrictions. Instead, they're encouraging the public to wear masks and avoid large gatherings. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Black Lives Matter protests around the U.S. is in its third week. There have been calls to defund the police. But what exactly would that mean? VOA's Jesu Seme Oni takes us through those details.
Black Lives Matter!
Outraged over the death of George Floyd and other black Americans during police encounters, a growing number of protesters are calling for dismantling the current system of policing in the United States.
The police receives billions and billions of dollars in order to brutalize minority communities, specifically black communities, which is completely unjust. It is oppression, it is racism in its finest.
With the Fund the Police becoming a rallying cry, there's growing debate over what that might mean. The dictionary definition of the word is to withdraw funding from. But advocates say, though, it's not about eliminating police departments, but instead diverting funds away from what they consider a militarized force, long accused of racism.
It means making sure that the resources that we put into the police that could be better spent on public health and social workers and public services that our communities desperately need are getting those funds as opposed to just going to the police, which are driven primarily in a lot of ways by violence.
But not all protesters agree with the broad slogan.
We can weed out the bad and keep and bring in the good, then I prefer that. I want to be able, if I need them, to call them.
Still, the movement is gaining steam. Los Angeles and New York officials have promised to cut their police budget, and the city council in Minneapolis, where Floyd died, has vowed to disband their police department.
Our commitment is to end our city's toxic relationship with the Minneapolis Police Department. To end policing as we know it.
It has been done before. Advocates point to Camden, New Jersey. For years considered one of the deadliest cities in the U.S., disbanded and rebuilt their entire police department in 2013. Violent crime rates declined significantly since. Such a major reform just requires a bold reimagining of the status quo, says Professor Justin Hansford.
The thing was segregation. Some people thought, wait, this is our way of life. Isn't it better if we're separate? You know, we've been like this for decades, but we were able to fight against segregation. And similarly, I think today with policing, the idea of abolishing it, it encourages us to think about replacing it with a better system.
But opponents to the funding say a one-size-fits-all approach to police reform is a bad idea.
If leadership has failed, management has failed, culturally, the department hasn't properly served its residents, then yes, it should be revamped or restructured. But to just simply say, we're going to dismantle, then what's your plan? And not all police departments are created the same. You can't just do a broad brush.
With lawmakers watching, as demands to restructure policing in America intensify, the movement is likely to be a hot-button issue in an already polarized election year. Jason Samoni, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Video conferencing company Zoom shut down a U.S.-led streaming event that was celebrating the 31st anniversary of China's Tiananmen Square protests. Zoom says meeting participants in different countries are required to comply with their respective local laws. The organizer says that Zoom was likely pressured by the Chinese Communist Party. You'll have all the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, many restaurant owners in Washington, D.C. saw their businesses looted or damaged during the Black Lives Matter protests. But instead of reopening, some are choosing to support the protesters. Karina Bafredjin explains.
Instead of open terraces filled with locals, many downtown D.C. restaurants and cafes instead are boarded up because of protests over the death of George Floyd. Amid the businesses that were looted and damaged during the protests in the U.S. Capitol was the restaurant Equinox that is located just steps away from the White House. They had only been open for a day when they had to close and board up their doors again.
You know, the first night we did walk down there when we heard what was going on, adrenaline kind of kicked in and we went you know, with the permission of the police to go down and, you know, you're like, it's like a mother, you know, you see your child pinned under a car and suddenly you can lift the car. It really just isn't about us and our property. There's such a bigger issue going on right now that talking about this damage done, at least on, you know, with us, is it just seems irrelevant.
When the looting happened, the restaurant was empty and no one from the staff got hurt. But no one knows when they will be able to go back to work safely.
I can't put my employees at risk that way, so we're not going to open until I'm listening closely to what the mayor says. I'm watching what's going on, and we have to give them room and not compete with them for space.
Owners of the chain Dolcezza also suffered some damage. Windows in one of their downtown cafes were broken.
The city center, yes. That individual store postponed the reopening of that until we kind of work and sort all this stuff out, and then we get new glass in the windows and all that. So that might be not open until another 2 or 3 weeks.
Counting the damages that protests have brought about is another painful chapter for restaurant and cafe owners after they were forced to close for over 2.5 months. Amy Brandwain, owner of restaurants Centralina and Piccolina, was luckier than most. She had boarded up windows and doors before the unrest began. But she still worries her businesses might not survive this new wave of hardships.
I actually can't sustain the economic damage that would entail, like, replacing the windows. It would really delay opening at some point in the future. It would really be hurtful for me. So the way I feel is that it should be peaceful, but there's been so much pain that it's very hard to control the emotions of the masses. And we need to get organized and making sure the votes are, you know, the voices are heard in a way that is impactful for change. You know, I'm not sure breaking any more windows is going to be doing it.
However, there are a lot of business owners that say they back the protesters no matter what, and if they sustain certain damage, so be it.
Whether you want to argue if it's all peaceful and that's the way to happen, or whether you want to argue, no, we must rise up, and within the rise, there is violence and there is destruction. I honestly don't know the way to what is the right way, if there is any right way for that to be able to happen. All I care about is it to happen.
The capital's restaurants are allowed to be open. However, the majority don't risk to open just yet, hoping things normalize soon. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Young teens of today have taken to the streets to protest Black Lives Matter. They say they want to wake up the world and make changes. The George Floyd event in Minneapolis, Minnesota highlighted widespread racism and police brutality. VOA's Bronwyn Benito follows America's youth.
Breonna Taylor! George Floyd!
Recent high school graduate Dondre Lee wove through crowds in downtown Washington, gathering images and interviews. He says the protest was peaceful.
But at around 6:15, the police came over the border and proceeded to block people in and have us in these small groups trying to cut people off from the large protest.
Lead says the crowd control approach inflamed tensions and disrupted the peace.
Because they're literally moving towards you and banging shields and making noise and pepper spraying people. That's how a lot of things escalate.
That's when the rioters and the looters and the anarchists show up. I feel like they're just waiting there, just waiting for someone to start. They absolutely do not care about this movement, because if you cared about this movement, you wouldn't be taking advantage of it.
Mohammed and Lead graduated from high school in suburban Washington last month. Lead says entering adulthood at this moment is scary.
It just feels like we're stepping into a world that's just completely awry, like, everything is going wrong at, like, the exact same time.
They're part of a global movement sparked by the deaths of Black Americans like George Floyd, who died in police custody. While he was being detained, a Minneapolis police officer pressed his knee on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes.
He can't breathe!
Caught on video, Floyd told the police, "I can't breathe," and the chant has been echoed by protesters around the world.
I think for once, it seems like the reaction is actually proportionate, at least in my opinion, to this accumulation of the same thing happening over and over and over again.
Mass protests in the U.S. have a history of driving change.
Several demonstrators were arrested.
This is a historical moment, and we can't just let history pass us by.
Like many young people, Tarjamo says he's getting involved politically to steer the country in a different direction. Zhu says everyone has a stake in lasting institutional change.
We can tweet about it, we can hashtag about it, we can be upset about it and share the video, but until we start going and taking political power, not much will change.
You can knock on people's doors and say, hey, what issues do you care about? That's not a partisan thing. I think a lot of the time the framing of it is partisan.
Lead, an aspiring documentary filmmaker, said he sees his role as capturing protests and interviewing those involved. His takeaway, a single person can make a difference.
No one should feel like they're not enough because everyone is enough. That's the whole point. We're ready for any support towards any issue. And driving change is just really up to you as a person. I can do my part. The next person can do their part. And it's just a chain.
Tarjamo says fixing a broken system is a project for his generation that will take decades.
I think that there's a hope that we can definitely go and take power and take control and try to go and make a change. But that, once again, just it depends on us.
For that change to happen, he says everyone needs to vote. Bronwyn Benito, VOA News.
Now on VOA Asia, deepfakes have a bad reputation for exploiting both entertainment and ethical purposes. Now one company is using this artificial intelligence face-swapping technology for improving mental health and therapy practices. VOA's Tina Trin will show us how.
One glance and you might do a double take. It's a deepfake video of actor Steve Buscemi as the actor Jennifer Lawrence. Deepfake videos use artificial intelligence and machine learning to generate a highly realistic version of the original video source, usually swapping out one person's face or likeness with another's.
I genuinely love the process of manipulating people.
They can be entertaining, or they can be intentionally misleading, like this deepfake of President Obama, which tries to pass for the real thing.
I don't know. Killmonger was right.
The startup team at Deliberate AI believes the face replacement technology can be a force for good, and they're using it to empower an unlikely group, mental health professionals.
There's this constant stress for clinicians about kind of not having enough time to kind of recall what actually happened during their sessions.
With Deliberate, therapists record their sessions with patients and have a catalog of videos to refer back to, all while maintaining patient privacy. How? That's where the face-swapping technology of deepfakes comes into play.
So it looks like a different person, but retains the emotional information and the characteristic information of that person's face.
In this demo, actor Nicolas Cage's face is used to mask a hypothetical patient's face. Deliberate AI detects and analyzes a patient's voice and how they look.
Maybe someone's speaking differently, so we can take that they've had some kind of change in mood or something's happening in their life that may affect the way they speak.
Hand motion or like subtle like change in like posture conveys some information about the patients.
Deliberate AI will soon begin testing at 3 clinics in New York and California. In this case, having the doctor not see you could be part of the cure. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Ira Melman, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Pulpy Boone in Washington, D.C.